Welcome to McGuire on Wrestling.
What do you guys want to talk about?
Let's give the people what they want. Professional wrestling.
With Mike McGuire.
The happiest Canadian camper in the world.
Tell me when I'm telling lies.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hello, happy Easter if you're celebrating this weekend. Thank you for downloading this week's show. A bit of a special one for you this week, as we've got a couple of guests lined up for you. Dave Meltzer's going to be here, as he always is. Plus, we're going to delve deep into the life of the Macho Man, Randy Savage, with author John Finkel, who has written what I'm going to say is probably one of my most favorite wrestling books not written by the wrestler themselves. And we'll talk about that with him coming up in just a bit. I hope you're getting some time to yourself, whether it's spending time with family, whether it is getting just to take a break in general, or you know what, if you are one of those people that's working this weekend, I always say this on the radio when I work on holidays, hey, thanks for doing what you do because you're making it possible for other people to get their time, and hopefully you get your time in exchange for that. But nevertheless, another week of McGuire on Wrestling. Yesterday, got to sit down with Mitch and Dimitri in Calgary as we were all together for a special episode of the Alternate Commentary Table. So if you haven't checked that one out yet, you really should. We had a ton of fun talking about all sorts of things. Of course, the build going up to WrestleMania, which is probably one of the best WrestleMania builds we've seen in a long time. And other things, all sorts of things, including this past week's AEW Dynamite, which was a really interesting show for a bunch of different reasons. But we've got more to talk about this week as the countdown to WrestleMania continues. Thank you so much for downloading the show. If you haven't subscribed yet, if you were to hit that subscribe button, it would mean a ton to us because we're doing this for love of the game, love of pro wrestling, and love of sharing the message. I want to thank especially those of you on the Team MOW McGuire on Wrestling Facebook page. You know, the hope was to generate a positive place to talk about pro wrestling. I've been a part of different wrestling things throughout the years, but I think we've managed to have our little group here become something that you know, we can have opinions about wrestling. We can have things we like and don't like, but we don't go crazy about it. We realize this is still just entertainment. This is for our liking, and you know, Devin Axman made a really nice post and a bunch of other people followed up on it with some really nice things to say. So, I mean, all credit goes to those of you that are members of the page. And if you haven't joined it yet, again, it's absolutely free to join Team MOW, McGuire on Wrestling. Look for that Facebook page and you can join the conversation there because it really is a good place, a cool place. Also, some things coming up. We're going to do something a little different this coming weekend. How it's going to play out exactly, I'm not 100% sure, but the likelihood of there being a show this Sunday is not going to be that great. What I might do is put up a best of interviews or something like that, but there's a couple reasons for that. A, it's WrestleMania weekend. We're all going to have a lot of wrestling to watch and talk about and listen about, and honestly, it's a lot. We want you to still be able to enjoy it and appreciate your support. So there will be some content up there for you. In fact, I've got some guests in the canon here that we're going to roll out over the next couple weeks. I got a couple interviews I'm really excited for you to hear. But I also want to give you a bit of a breather sometimes. And the other reason with all this is that it's my birthday. It's selfish, whatever. It's going to be my birthday on April 7th, which is next Sunday. I think I'm going to give myself a day off. Is that okay? Is that, if there's still something there for you to listen to, is that okay? Nevertheless, appreciate you being here. Appreciate you supporting the show by subscribing. If you're one of the people that have picked up one of those t-shirts through McGuireShow.com, thank you for that. And we got lots of fun stuff planned for the new year. It's going to be a really, I say the new year. That's what it feels like though, right? For wrestling fans? Like, yeah, January 1st was whatever, but really, it's the week after WrestleMania. That's the new year for all of us. So if you want to reach out anytime, you can find me on social at McGuire Show, or you can email me directly, McGuireShow@yahoo.com. One more thing I wanted to give a shout out to was Dungeon Wrestling and the crew there this past Friday night. We had an absolute blast putting on a show, six matches, hnlive.ca. If you want to watch the show, you can still do that now. It's up for stream anytime you like. It's only $12 Canadian. And I can tell you now, after it happened, A, I blew my voice, So that's how exciting it was from a commentary standpoint. And B, some really great matches on that card. Some really just great knockdown, drag-out wrestlers and wrestling. And I don't know. I just love doing this because it's old school, it's fun, and it really is a true pleasure and an honor to be a part of that. But I'm not telling you this to get a payday for myself or anything, because you know, it doesn't matter to me if you buy one or buy 20 pay-per-views. I just like supporting wrestling, and that goes for all the great independent wrestling going on out there. There's going to be a ton of it this week, and we'll talk to Dave Meltzer about that and more. But big love to that crew. And again, dungeonwrestling.ca. A big announcement was made. We'll tell you about in the five count if you missed that. But it really was a fun and simple show with some great wrestlers and some great wrestling. Coming up this week, yeah, we'll take you to that announcement that was made at Dungeon Wrestling. In fact, a guy that made another surprise this past weekend on AEW TV. Ricky Starks is shaking off an injury after a scare last night. The road to WrestleMania is set, but are we still adding matches? Plus, Dave Meltzer walks us through some of the headlines, and John Finkel will tell us all about the life of the Macho Man, Randy Savage. That's all coming up, but first, let's take you through some of the top stories of the week. We call it the five count.
You want to hear the breaking news?
Well, more matches are being added to the WrestleMania card, as we saw this past Friday on WWE SmackDown. Jade Cargill made her official debut as a signed SmackDown star and got into some business at the end of the show, which now sees her, Naomi, and Bianca Belair taking on the rest of Damage Control for a three-on-three woman match at WrestleMania. What also seems to be lined up is the AOP and Karrion Kross taking on Bobby Lashley and the Street Profits. More about that with Dave Meltzer coming up as the show continues. This past Friday was Dungeon Wrestling's Unfinished Business 2 pay-per-view from Calgary, Alberta. Myself and Mitch and Dimitri from the alternate commentary table were on the card together doing commentary, but I had the pleasure of announcing the next headline star for Dungeon coming up on June 21st. Turns out the house that Hart built will be visited by a deathmatch king.
I've been given clearance by Dungeon Wrestling promoter Dallas Hart to make the following announcement. And that is that following the winner of tonight's contest for the Stu Hart Heritage Heavyweight Championship, the next man chosen to challenge for that title, coming here to Calgary in the Victoria Pavilion, will be the Indie God, Matt Cardona!
What?
Wow!
What?
Wow, what a name!
Coming up next week on the show, we'll hear from Chris Masters, who is the Stu Hart Heritage Heavyweight Champion, as he talks about the way life has been going for him over the last few weeks since departing the NWA, and of course, continuing to increase his resume at this stage in his career. Ricky Starks has come out and said that he's doing okay after what appeared to be a bit of a stinger in the ring this past Saturday night on AEW Collision. He and Big Bill were taking on Top Flight in the AEW Tag Team Tournament, and there were two different occasions where the pinfall looked like there was supposed to be a kickout and have the team of Starks and Big Bill win.
Into a DDT using his brother's electric pin. Two and
got it! Wow!
Starks is out. In the tag team title tournament, Top Flight.
What a win!
Wow! The AEW medical staff did tend to Starks after the match immediately to check if he was okay, but according to his social media, Starks says he's just fine. Olympic gold medalist turned WWE NXT star Tamra Mensah-Stock has made her in-ring debut. She took on Brianna Covington in a match in Melbourne, Florida over the weekend. Mensah-Stock is the first black female to ever earn a gold medal in women's freestyle wrestling back in 2021. And it was almost a year ago that she signed with WWE. She is now the first female gold medalist to perform in WWE history. And Becky Lynch continues to promote her new book, doing interviews all over the place, including WrestlingNews.co, where she had some things to say about Rhea Ripley's recent viral videos of her performing the infamous stink face from WWE live events.
If I'm a girl who's growing up and wants to be a professional wrestler and I see, oh, well, that's the stuff that gets a reaction and that's the stuff that people are talking about and that's the stuff that we're posting on social media and we continue to, even the company does does and pushes that, then that is the stuff that gets over, and then I'm not taken seriously for what I do in the ring and for the person that I am and the mind that I have. No, it's just about my body, it's about how it looks, and it's about fulfilling a bunch of men's fantasies out there in the crowd, and it becomes not about the art, it becomes about that.
Of course, Becky and Rhea face off for the WWE Women's World Championship this weekend at WrestleMania. Coming up, we are going to take a deep dive like you may have never heard or read before in the life of the Macho Man Randy Savage with author John Finkel. But up next, we take in some of the headlines and get some feedback on the week from the Wrestling Observer's Dave Meltzer.
This is McGuire on Wrestling.
You got to stream the alternate commentary table. Every single Saturday, it's brought to you on the McGuire on Wrestling feed. I'm one half of your host, Demetra Carolis, and I'm here with my partner, Mitch Hondris. Mitch, what is the alternate commentary table?
It's simple. It's the perspective of wrestling from the other side of the railing, the real fans.
That's right. The perspective that you need. You might have a little bit of fun, too. The alternate commentary table. Subscribe free now to the McGuire on Wrestling podcast feed wherever you get your podcast.
Cha-cha!
Welcome back to McGuire on Wrestling.
Well, as we look back today in pro wrestling history, of course, the biggest event to be celebrated on March 31st was the first ever WrestleMania from Madison Square Garden. The main event featured Hulk Hogan, along with his tag team partner, Mr. T, and accompanied to the ring by Jimmy Superfly Snuka, taking on the tag team of Mr. Wonderful, Paul Orndorff, and Rowdy Roddy Piper with Cowboy Bob Orton in their corner. Muhammad Ali would serve as one of the special referees, as would Pat Patterson. Liberace was the timekeeper. It was quite the do. And in the end, it would see Hogan and T win after Bob Orton would accidentally hit Mr. Wonderful with his signature cast.
Look out!
Coincidentally, March 31st only held one other WrestleMania in the entire history of the event, and that was WrestleMania 12 from Anaheim, California, where that was main evented by the 60-man Iron Man match between Shawn Michaels and Bret the Hitman Hart.
It's time for the Wrestling Observer Insider with Dave Meltzer, McGuire on Wrestling.
We are less than a week away from WrestleMania 40, joining us to talk about everything going on. As he does, Dave Meltzer from The Wrestling Observer and WrestlingObserver.com. Dave, how's your week been?
It's been a tough week. But yeah. And this week coming up is like really tough. You know, just so much wrestling. That's,
yeah.
You know, I mean, there's WrestleMania, there's Ring of Honor pay-per-view, there's Hall of Fame, there's, NXT Stand and Deliver. I mean, Friday, Saturday, Sunday is insane.
And then if you even want to delve into all the other shows that are leading up throughout the week with WrestleCon shows, the GCW shows, the you name it, it's happening.
Yeah. WrestleCon show is always great. You know, that's always one of the highlights of the year, really. Just the unique style of that. And there's a New Japan show on pay-per-view on Saturday as well. So it's Saturday's a loaded day, yeah.
Are you going to sleep? Like, how are you planning on living your life?
I don't know how this week's going to go. I'm just waiting for it to be over in a lot of ways. But it'll be very entertaining for the week, but it's going to be a very difficult week timing-wise, yeah.
The WrestleMania build, I didn't expect this to happen, but they're still announcing matches.
I think we're done at 13. At least I got a message, you know, about and it ended up getting the whole card. But this would have been on during the week. And okay. it was 13 matches, and we basically know 12 of the 13th, and the 13th one, you know, is the AOP and Karrion Kross against Bobby Lashley and the Street Profits. So I was told that's the card. 7 matches on Saturday, 6 on Sunday. Obviously, it's WWE. I mean, it's all lined up, timed out, blah, 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 but it can still change because there's things on that thing that as of Thursday changed by Friday. And there's one other thing that's up in the air. So I don't know. Even one of the matches that's announced, still, from what I was told, there's still a possibility of a change. So it's not like Vince in the sense where he could change 3 or 4 things at the drop of a hat. I don't expect that. You know, we don't get that nearly as much as we do. But still, things, you know, can always, it's a storyline business. You can always change stuff.
We did see some interesting things on SmackDown, like we've already mentioned a little bit here. One of the most interesting ones, I think, is that Jade Cargill made her debut on SmackDown officially as a member of the roster, I guess. I mean,
it seems like debut after debut after debut for her. But this time now, it looks like she's going to be in this tag match at WrestleMania.
Yeah. She's
her first big match debut is going to be at WrestleMania.
Well, her first big match debut was a Rumble, but I know what you mean. Yeah. It's funny. I thought for sure, especially after the Rumble, that her first match would be with Nia Jax. And I thought that, you know, that was probably the right match to do, because all you basically need is that WrestleMania moment, which is her doing the body slam. I thought it was easy. And instead, she's in the sixth man. And I guess they figured that that's whatever it was. It's just a decision that they made creatively to go with a six-woman match, as opposed to, her and Nia Jax.
How do you feel she looked overall coming out of this thing?
Well, she looked like a star. So, you know, I thought it was great, actually. They presented her strong. When she came in, she ran over everybody. It wasn't like, you know, the other women, Naomi and Bianca, were the ones that had to sell to set her up. And I thought it was fine. I mean, there's 100 ways you could do it, but I thought this way was fine.
I thought her promo game was pretty good, especially considering where she used to be with that. And I'm not talking about at the end of AEW. I thought she had really developed that towards the end of AEW. But, when you consider her first debut in AEW compared to how she first showed up on the scene in WWE, there's definite growth. There's definite change there.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's been a couple of years.
Yeah.
And she's had a lot of matches, and she's, you know, they're acclimating. She's getting the star treatment, and they're acclimating her to be a star. They have every intention of making her a larger-than-life superstar, and now it's just a question of, how she gets over. And right now, you know, I mean, initially I think she's going to get over big, and then it's just a question of staying power. And, you know, that depends on a lot of different factors, you know, how you're booked, which I think she'll be booked well, you know, and just how the crowd reacts. You know, you never know. I mean, I think the crowd's certainly going to be hot for her for the first several months, and after that, you know, who knows what'll happen.
This past SmackDown, just to close on that part of the show here, seemed to build a lot on the secondary matches, a lot on the undercard here. We didn't get a ton of talk, of course, about the mains. Probably the best move. Do you think they've pretty much sold this thing as far as they can sell it now?
Well, like Cody said, the horse is in the barn. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you've had the angles. One last group of promos. I think that the Rock and Cody angle was the last big physical angle, probably. And it's done. Look, it's going to be a big success. It's going to be financially the most successful WrestleMania there's ever been. And now it's just get through the week and execute the show.
Had this conversation with our guys over on the alternate commentary table, another show on our feed here. And we were talking about the criticism, and I'd brought it up a little bit with you last week here about The Rock versus Cody seeming like the biggest angle here. And the more I've had time to think about it now, I want your thoughts if you agree or disagree on this. But my thinking towards it is that, you know what, it does seem that way, but these guys are also in a unique position where they've had, especially Cody, he's had to sell himself in two main events. So I think now that I look back at it, he's made each match seem very important for different reasons. The tag match between him, Seth, and Rock and Rollins, and then, of course, his title opportunity the next night. So I guess, you know, would you agree that maybe Cody's done the best work he can to make both main events of the two nights seem important?
Yes, I think he's done a fantastic job. They're both big main events, and one builds to the other. So it's like it's not a self-contained two matches. It's one match that builds to the other match. It's all part of the same story.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the grudge with Rock, and he's got the grudge and big championship match with Roman. And it looks like it's all going to play out. And I think he should win. But you know what? I mean, it's like last year. You know, he didn't win last year and the world didn't end. If he doesn't win this year, I'll be super surprised. But and I really strongly, even stronger than last year, think he should win. But the world doesn't end if he doesn't. You know what I mean? Their business is going to be gigantic either way. It's they're not risking their business on a bad finish. But I think 2 years is long enough to go with this story. And now it's time to climax the story.
Yeah, there's still lots of runway left for Cody, presuming he gets this first championship. I mean, this is one of what could be many, right? Well, let's shift over now to AEW. A lot of chatter coming out of last night's Collision. Matt Cardona answering the Adam Copeland Open Challenge, or as I still think they should call it, the Copen Challenge, but that's me. Matt Cardona actually just announced to be joining us for Dungeon Wrestling in June as well. Cheap plug there. But his appearance at AEW last night, do you think that's where they're going to go with this open challenge, where they're going to bring in a lot of surprise outside guys?
Cody did that a little bit, if you remember.
Right.
And it ended up, you know, they ended up getting Ricky Starks a job. It ended up getting making Eddie Kingston a big star. There's something to it. You know, the issue is AEW's got so many people under contract.
That's what I was going to say next. They've got the roster. It's like
there's so many people on the roster that need TV time. So I would make it a mix where you do the surprise every, you know, enough, like, and then your own guys as well. And, you know, builds up to the pay-per-view and everything. But yeah, as far as on the show and everything like that, I thought it was a big success because the crowd really got into that match. Mm-hmm. And they had a very good match. I just thought, yeah, it was much better than I had envisioned, you know, if he was going to go against just some random guy on the roster that I figured he would beat. You know, Matt Cardona is probably the biggest name on the indie scene, although there's others that you could bring in, but not a lot. But it'll be interesting to see what happens because, you know, obviously Matt Cardona got a great, great reaction. So there would be, and when Matt Cardona first was let go by WWE, they brought him in for like a 5-date contract and then they didn't renew, but he has upped his name and really established his name and done a great job on the independent scene. But like, it's like, does AEW need more people? They have so many people on the roster that, like, even when I see like someone really, really good, it used to be like, oh, I hope AEW signs him. And now it's like, what are they going to do with them? You know, there's so many guys that they're just sitting there. So they don't have to sign him. By the rules of nature, he got over really big. Shouldn't use him again? And the answer is yes.
I don't even know if he would sign, to be honest with you. I think it would be the smart play if he didn't.
It all depends on the money. If it's a low contract, he can do his own thing. But I mean, as much as he's probably having the time of his life on the indie scene, there's still more stability. You know, I mean, look, he's said if WWE calls him back, he's going, whatever the deal is. And Tony can offer him far more than he can make on the indie scene. But, you know, all remains to be seen.
That's true. All right. Well, like I said, he was announced for our next Dungeon Wrestling show coming up in June. And I can tell you that the fans in Calgary were pretty excited to hear that coming up. Sticking with AEW for a second, another guy that we saw last time they were in Calgary, Ricky Starks had a bit of a stinger moment. He's saying he's going to be okay, though.
That's what he said. Yeah.
Another one of these moments, though, where the ref didn't finish the count. Is that something they just got to let happen now? Like, if he doesn't get up, he doesn't kick out.
Yeah. I mean, that should be the rule. And it's so awkward when you don't do it. It makes the ref look bad. It makes the match look bad. So, yeah, it should be something that they're all taught. You know, in WWE, they're taught that. But when it's like in this situation, you know, it's a, part of a tournament. And you know what I mean? And this tournament's been laid out for however long. And it's supposed to go in a certain way. And there's a reason that it was booked this way, obviously, you know, because FTR and Ricky Starks and Big Bill, you know, I mean, they had that match and this is the rematch. And by counting to three, you screw it up. And I'm sure it's on the referee's head, but I think that the overriding thing should just be that it's the guy's job to kick out. It's not your job to protect and to make it look bad. And, you know, but it's when the referee's in the heat of the moment and he knows what the finish is, you know, it's not just AEW refs. I've seen that with every single company refs in a situation where they don't want to hit three because they know it's not the finish.
No, but at the same time, I mean, remember, R-Truth became the U.S. champion because Shinsuke didn't kick out in time, right? I mean, we've seen you can book your way out of that if it happens. It's not the end of the world. So I don't know. I think it's a lot more damaging if the ref literally just stops the count and everybody goes,
I agree. But, you know, if that's a split-second decision by a referee who knows the finish, and it's a tough one to make.
Well, Top Flight did end up getting the win after the, I don't know if you want to call it a botched pin or whatever it was, but it was clear even when Stark's music played after the initial three count that the match was supposed to go the other way. Okay, well, I'm not going to keep you too long this week because honestly, Dave, we've got a pretty cool conversation coming up as well with a guy named John Finkel who has written a book. And it's fantastic. It's called Macho Man, The Untamed, Unbelievable Life of Randy Savage. He went through a ton of people. I mean, even found like old Little League teammates of Randy and everything else. Like it's a great read if you get a chance. I mean, I know you're a little busy these days, but nevertheless, like he found hundreds of people for this book, and he quotes the right sources. We've talked about Randy before, especially when that A&E biography came out, which was basically a hit job. What do you think would be a fair summation without, you know, delving too much into the guy's personal life, because it's not fair to him, but what would you say would be the most misunderstood thing about Randy Savage?
I don't know if it's a misunderstood thing about Randy Savage. I just think it's funny because the best Randy Savage I saw was years before WWE. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was phenomenal working for his father. I mean, he's phenomenal in WWE too. And in some ways he was more polished worker, but yeah, I mean, young Randy Savage, when I saw him, I mean, he blew my mind. I mean, he was like, and I couldn't believe he was working, you know, in such a small territory, even though his family owned it. It was kind of like, this guy should be like, you know, I thought he was like Ric Flair level, you know, and he wasn't, you know, magazine wise and everything. You didn't see his name like Ric Flair or anything like that back, I'm talking late 70s. And, you know, but eventually, you know, he was Ric Flair level. I mean, he was one of the real icons of the business. And he went to, you know, when he went to WWF, it was, I mean, he was, yeah, like realistically in that 80s period, you know, he was Hogan's number one opponent. You know, him and Andre's more famous in some ways because of the one match, but night after night after night, it's Randy was the number one guy, even more than Roddy Piper and champion, you know, and all that. I mean, and Slim Jim, you know, I mean, as far as more people would know him than probably know all but a few wrestlers in history just from the Slim Jim stuff.
Even nowadays, I mean, he's probably the most memed wrestler, you know, like you see these random references to him on the internet for all sorts of things. I don't think anybody gets as much play online, especially from that era, as a Randy Savage does. But we'll talk to John about that as well. But Dave, I know there's been a ton of stuff you've been working on throughout the week here. There was a great Dynamite this past Wednesday. I'm sure you had lots of thoughts on, but what are some things people can read about in the latest edition of the Wrestling Observer newsletter that came out?
Yeah. I mean, the main thing is Cody and Rock, and how, you know, Rock has changed everything for everyone, and the build to this year's WrestleMania and the business of this year's WrestleMania. It's the lead story. And, you know, a lot of stuff on Ronda Rousey and her book and Becky Lynch and, Japan, where they're doing, all the companies are getting together for a big charity show at Budokan Hall in May. And obviously the international stuff, the Arena Mexico from last night, which will have a lot of coverage on in the new issue, is an amazing show. Just, you know, the show it reminded most people of was the 1997 Canadian Stampede show in Calgary.
Really?
Yeah, because of the incredible crowd and just the uniqueness of the team versus team, which was, instead of USA versus Canada, it was USA versus Mexico, or AEW versus CMLL in the main event. And what an incredible spectacle. You know, really... I mean, from a crowd standpoint, from the opening match to the main event, is one of the greatest crowds that I have seen in years and years, ever, maybe ever seen for a wrestling show. It's like probably up there in the top 10 crowds I've ever seen. And atmosphere was so good, sellout. Watching Bryan Danielson and Blue Panther. Bryan Danielson, you know, if you know the story behind it, and, you know, I'll actually have that whole story in the issue coming up, you know. Bryan Danielson, this is like one of his dreams. He's talked about this for, you know, decades, well over a decade. He's wanted this match, and I'm really happy that this last year of Bryan Danielson's career has been everything he wanted. You know, getting to work with Shibata and getting to work with these different people, you know, working with Will Ospreay next. But it's just been one, you know, Blue Panther and Okada. And it's just been one of those things where everything he's got a different perspective on wrestling, and everything that he's wanted wrestling to be and him to be in wrestling, he's going to get to do in his last year. Zach was another one. You know, I mean, Zach and Blue Panther and you know, might have been like the two big ones for him for years and years and years, and probably Okada, and you know, got to work with Eugene Nagata, which was another one that he wanted. You know, so I mean, this last couple of months and the couple of months coming up, I mean, I don't think he dreamed of Will Ospreay, but I think that now Will Ospreay, because of the status of what Will Ospreay's done in the last year, it's another dream one. So I wonder if he's going to do Nigel.
That could be interesting because McGuinness did say that he was feeling good in the ring recently. Maybe. Oh, man, could that be an all-in match?
If it happens, I would expect all-in. Yeah.
Nah.
I don't know that he's going to do the McGuinness match, but if he does, it would be there. And I know, and this is a tough one because I don't know if this one's going to happen because of Omega's injuries. But I know that, you know, they want to do another one last Omega match, too, because the first, remember, the first one was a draw, and it was there to essentially build another match, which was supposed to happen actually at Wembley Stadium. And, you know, at that point, Danielson got hurt, so they couldn't do it. So, I mean, there's, you know, I'm hoping, you know, with Kenny that he's healthy enough to where he can come back. But I you know, when it comes to Kenny, honestly, I just hope he's healthy enough because he's been through a ringer. You know, he really has been.
Well, there was some word going around saying that it's looking like he can't avoid the surgery here. Do you know anything clear about that?
I mean, I've been in touch with him, and it's not 100%, but it's more and more likely he's going to have the surgery. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, again, all the best to him. I'm hoping whatever needs to happen, again, whether you like, love, or dislike any wrestler out there, you never want to see anybody get injured, and you definitely never want to see anybody's career end due to an injury. So, I mean, like I told you back in the day, I was seeing him wrestle around the prairies here in Canada, and he'd come and do shows, and a lot of self-tan and a lot of baby oil, but man, he was good. So
he's fantastic. He's a fantastic athlete who turned into a you know, really one of the best wrestlers of this generation. Yeah.
He is Dave Meltzer from the Wrestling Observer and WrestlingObserver.com as we get ready for WrestleMania 1 week away, less than that. Dave, all the best in covering everything. Thanks for being here, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Okay, cool.
Coming up next on the show, an amazing conversation with a very skilled author. He has written a new book all about the life and times of the Macho Man Randy Savage in a way that I have never read a wrestling book presented in this style before. I think you're going to dig the conversation, and I think you're going to dig the book too. John Finkel, the author of Macho Man, The Untamed, Unbelievable Life of Randy Savage, is on the way. Thank you very much for downloading the show today.
This is McGuire on Wrestling.
You got to stream the alternate commentary table. Every single Saturday, it's brought to you on the McGuire on Wrestling feed. I'm one half of your host, Demetra Carolis, and I'm here with my partner, Mitch Hondris. Mitch, what is the alternate commentary table?
It's simple. It's the perspective of wrestling from the other side of the railing, the real fans.
That's right. The perspective that you need. You might have a little bit of fun, too. The alternate commentary table. Subscribe free now to the McGuire on Wrestling podcast feed wherever you get your podcast.
Cha-cha!
Welcome back to McGuire on Wrestling.
A new book is available through ECW Press by John Finkel. It's called Macho Man, The Untamed, Unbelievable Life of Randy Savage. And here to talk all about it, the man who put pen to paper, John Finkel. Thanks for being here. It's great to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Thank you for having me on. I love the copy, the shirt. It's how I walk around all day, every day in my house, holding the book, wearing my macho.
That's the way it should be. Absolutely. Just walk up to random people. Hold on. Have you bought my book yet? Have you read my book yet? You really should. I really want to thank you for this read, and I'm not blowing smoke. People who listen to this show before know that I actually have like bona fide reading comprehension issues. So your book presents something I love and a subject I love in a way that's really easy to read. It's really engaging. It's really fun to follow along with. So I just wanted to thank you for that because the action starts and you keep finding ways to keep the reader hooked.
Thank you. Yeah. I've always gone along with the writing philosophy that every chapter has to start with action.
Mm-hmm.
I assume that, you know, people are reading it in bed or on their couch. Rarely do people just block off 3 hours to read something. So I always like to leave people with the chapter opens and you're into it, and then it concludes, and then the next one starts with an exciting visual scene. And so I appreciate you saying that because it's on purpose.
Well, it's going to sound like I'm buttering your bread here. Trust me, if there's something I didn't like, I would tell you that as well. But as I was reading this book, despite my own comprehension struggles like we've talked about, I also do a morning radio show. So I find myself in positions as I'm reading where I had to negotiate with myself to put it down because it kept pulling me in. So I'm going to stop selling the book here for you and let you do that in a second. But For those that don't know the work of John Finkel and don't know your history, you've had several books out there before on a variety of topics, but tell us a little bit about your experience as an author and what brought you here.
Yeah, sure. So I started out writing for newspapers back when they mattered, and then magazines back when they mattered. And I wrote for Muscle and Fitness and Men's Fitness and Men's Health and GQ. And if it had men's or health or fitness in the title, I wrote for it. I've always been pretty self-proclaimed meathead when it comes to that kind of thing. And I got to do a lot of cover stories with, you know, WWE guys because of that. I did cover stories on Batista and Triple H and Brock Lesnar and, you know, UFC guys, Randy Couture and all those kind of guys. So I spent a lot of time in that world. And I became an author while I was writing there, like most writers do, who are interested in writing books that are, you know, interesting in writing things longer than just a 3,000 or 4,000 word, you know, magazine cover story or feature.
Right.
And so I started writing books probably 2013, 14. My first book was an autobiography with Nate Robinson, the 3-time NBA dunk champion, who was only like 5'8", which was really fantastic to work with and write with him. And then I moved into sort of more larger frame books. I did Mean Joe Green's autobiography, a biography of Charlie Ward, a book on the Seattle Supersonics, the whole history of the team and why they left and how they left and all those kind of things. And then all the way up to my bucket list biography here, The Macho Man.
It's interesting that you say bucket list, because I was going to ask you, what brought you to the decision to even attempt to write the life story of a guy like the Macho Man, Randy Savage, who sadly didn't get the opportunity to do that himself?
Yeah, it was one of those books that I've always had in the back of my mind, like a Mount Rushmore book for me. I'm sorry, Mount Everest book for me, where it was like, okay, so thankfully no one had done it, and I'd always wanted to tackle it, and I wanted to make sure I had the chops and that I had the confidence to do it, and that I knew how to do it. You know, it wasn't the kind of book I wanted to tackle on my own from the first book, basically. Like, I didn't, you know, having not known how to done books, so had not known how to write books. So I'd written a bunch, obviously, up to this point. So I had a game plan, and I kind of knew how I wanted to do it. But the idea, you know, for it was seeded when I was a kid. I mean, I watched wrestling all growing up. I used to. My first favorite wrestler was Big John Studd, and I used to call myself Little John Studd and all that stuff. And then Macho comes on the scene, and, you know, with his charisma and his talent and the twirling and the twitches and the promos, he's just, you can't take your eyes off him. And the voice, I'm doing the voice at 8, 9 years old. And, you know, I would say, like, one of the things that I think early on made him stick was his signature, you know, off the top rope elbow move was a great move to do to my younger brother off my bed. I could do his moves.
Absolutely.
I'm not going to do the Hogan leg drop on the carpet. I'm not going to do that. That's not that much fun. Clotheslines aren't fun. But positioning your brother, like, you know, on a beanbag 8 feet away while you're loading up off. Now that is something I can get onto. So for me, that was why he became my guy. And then, you know, when you become an author, you have subjects that, you know, every author has probably in the back of their head couple subjects, or if you're in fiction, ideas you want to tackle, and this was one of the big ones I wanted to get to.
You know, it's funny you say that. I'm by no means an author, but there is one subject out there that I really want to write about one day, and it might actually surprise people. I might tell you off the air here, but getting back to the book, what I found really interesting about your approach in this book, I think, and what kept me in so much was the fact that you actually went to so many, and I don't even know how many, but so many outside sources and interviewed so many people that knew Randy directly and knew the family so well, and you use their stories rather than doing what many authors might be tempted to do, and that is tell the story from their perspective and say, you know, this is the definitive story from my perception of the Macho Man Randy Savage, and you go out of your way to sometimes let that go. Like, there's even the story about how Macho Man entered Randy Savage's wrestling moniker, and you have the one story about how his mom was involved and the song, and then another story about what happened at a baseball game. Like, you go to different sources and let the other people tell the story. Was that hard for you as an author to give up maybe that license of perspective and let so many other people contribute to helping you tell the story?
That's a great question. No, it's hard. It's very hard because, number one, wrestlers are known to tell story. That's half of their, you know, their job is just creating this illusion. Whereas some of the other books I wrote, the biographies I wrote, I'm not worried about whether the story they're telling is true in terms of a game, you know, how this happened in a game. You can always check the box score. You know, they're not lying about their persona. They're not going to say they played this team when they didn't play this team. Whereas wrestlers over the years will pretty much say anything if it's getting a pop, right? Even in a conversation.
Yeah.
And yeah. So one of the things I realized early on, and you're using the name thing as an example, as a perfect example, is that when you're a journalist, which I came up in a journalism background, I didn't want to write anything that wasn't fact, but I also didn't want to be like the great decider of which one was true. And especially that one where there's four pretty compelling stories that are told throughout his life. Two of them that he told regularly throughout the latter half of his career, both of which simply can't be true because of the timeline of the events in his life. So, one of them, on video, he tells over and over, when you look at the time frame of what he's saying, it doesn't match up. It's not actually chronologically possible to have thought these things. And there's also nothing written about them. So, one of them you mentioned, he I want readers to read all of the opinions, but the one you mentioned about, how he hit someone in baseball and the next day they were calling him a macho man. That had never happened, didn't happen anywhere. No writer ever talked about that. At the time, he was a very quiet kid named Randy Poffo, trying his hardest to make the majors without any thought of wrestling. There is no reason why he would have ever been called Macho Man or thought of being called Macho Man because he was only Randy Poffo. And so it was one of those where, he even tells stories in there about getting hit as a baseball player in the sideline, while he was in the on deck circle. And the baseball beat writer who was there that day contradicted Randy's entire story from 5 years, and that was even his quotes were wrong. So it's how it is. I've gotten used to it. Athletes, a lot of them have photographic memories for a lot of things they do. It's, listen to any NFL quarterback, they recall plays from high school and why we did this and why we did that. But it's funny how often that over time, they got used to selling something one way. You'll call and be like, you'll look up the research and be like, well, that game, it was actually in a dome, not outside, so it couldn't have been snowing, And it's like, they'll remember vividly. Oh, I remember I threw two touchdowns in the second half, and it's like, actually, it was a scoreless second half, so nobody threw touchdowns. Like, come up, and with wrestling, even more so.
You got some great photos included in the book. Of course, we've talked about some of the sources, but one of the main ones was Randy's brother, Leaping Lanny Poffo, the genius for fans of different generations. And, of course, we lost Lanny during that entire process. Was that once you'd finished the book, or was that in the middle of the formative process?
No, I was in the middle of writing it.
So you're in the middle of it then. We lose Lanny. Are you tempted at all to maybe shelf the project for a bit and just let it rest, or did you keep going?
Lanny was one of hundreds of people I talked to, but obviously the most important one. The way it worked with Lanny was, so I had the book proposal done. I had people interested in it. My agent and I were talking about doing it. But I just did not feel comfortable writing it unless I had Lanny as a resource. Now, it wasn't an authorized thing. There was nothing contractual. It was just, I wanted to be able to talk to him. I felt like it would be a little fraudulent in terms of saying it's a big journalistic enterprise if I never talked to his brother, who was the guy who, grew up with him, who also was in the same profession as him, who was kind of the torchbearer of the family. I mean, the only one left at the time when I was writing this was Lanny. Angelo passed away, Judy passed away, Randy passed away, Elizabeth had passed away. And so he was around, and it took over a year, almost a year, to get in touch with him. He lived in Ecuador half the year. He was kind of tough to get a hold of. A mutual friend who I'd interviewed for another book, JP Zarka, who runs a pro wrestling story site, which is great, got us in touch together because he had done a podcast with him a while back. And when we finally got in touch, we had like a gauntlet of questions, and I'm sure he was very leery. He'd been approached a number of times about different kinds of projects with his brother's life. And I think what tipped him over into wanting to talk to me about it was my journalist background, my mainstream sports background. I think he was very leery of lifelong wrestling writers, very leery of the wrestling media trying to pull out things about Elizabeth or something about the end of his career that, and so I painted my vision for the book. Luckily he was into it. And then we spoke for 2 or 3 hours straight after that. He luckily said, I'm available. And so I kept a running list of questions to ask him, I didn't text him. It was through like Telegram or something. He was in Central America or wherever. So it was not.
That's wild. That's wild.
And so I would text him things or message him things. And then I kept a running list of questions on the desk while I was writing all the time and interviewing him. I'd interview somebody who would tell me an awesome story, and I'd be like, I should ask Lanny about their side of that story. And I was able to in some cases, and then he passed away. So as far as shelving it, no, I mean, I got other than new things that came up that would have been, you know, would have been nice to talk to him about, I got all the had to have, you know, the way I've kind of looked at it is that is like, I got the had to have long conversation about all the specifics and things that I wanted to, the things that I think make the book, you know, what was it like walking into an arena when you were a kid and Randy was a kid and your dad was a heel getting booed? And what was it like when in the room when Randy didn't get drafted for Major League Baseball for baseball team? Like, what was it like in your house that day?
Yeah.
The real stuff that only he was there for and only he was alive to tell. So there were definitely questions that would have been nice over the time, but in the grand scope of the book, when he had passed away, I think I had all that I could have hoped to get from him. And he was just great. He was awesome. And, you know, one of the things I really looked forward to the most, was showing him the book, as, you know, the pride of showing it to him. I think he would have really enjoyed it. And, you know, look, I'm not pretending to be best friends with him. I met him in the last 9 months of his life or so.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you're talking about family and your life and your parents, you have a connection there. And it would have been great if he read it. It bummed me out that he didn't, which is why I dedicated the book to him.
When you were just talking about that feeling and getting those linear, visceral experiences, like you talk about the house and you take us there and you get all these stories from all these great people who were there at different points in the life, who knew the family, who knew them well before all the fame. But you tell these incredible stories, like the one of Angelo Poffo. And I'm not going to spoil the whole book here, but Angelo Poffo, Lanny and Randy's father, coming down to watch Randy play baseball in what you can only describe as basically his wrestling gimmick, like showing up in a Speedo and him bringing his wrestler friends down. So they're all kind of, you know, stowing up in their gear or whatever and just sitting there and watching baseball, and you hear stories like that, and you go, that couldn't have happened. But then you realize, oh, they're wrestlers. That probably did happen.
Angelo, well, that happened. I mean, this is all independent people. I mean, I talked to almost all the kids he played with in his neighborhood, in his street. You know, thankfully, yeah. Facebook. The best thing for these things is like the high school reunion pages on Facebook, right? So you get a hold of, you know, I'm writing this book, and you start talking to one person who was in his graduating class, and then, oh, did you talk to this person and this person? And everybody, thankfully, I always say writing a book, nobody has to say anything to you. They're getting, you know, they're talking to you for 15, 20 minutes. They're recalling things from years ago. But when things are all told, when a bunch of people are telling the same story, and that story about Angelo, it happened over and over. I mean, he was a buff dude. He would come down to so the way they lived, if you can picture it, they lived on a regular street. There was a little bit of woods, and then about 30 or 40 feet through the woods, it dumped out onto the town baseball field. And so he would just walk down this hill. You could see it in left field, this big long hill, and then you'd come down in left field, and you could either walk, you know, through the fence. There wasn't, you can go through the fence, but around the fence to get on the field, or all the way around to where the stands were. And the memories these kids have of from Little League, there was a couple fields there, from Little League all the way through of Angelo in a Speedo and flip flops. This was apparently his thing, even when it was, you know, getting colder in Chicago, of Speedo flip flops, bathing suit flip flops, no shirt most of the time. He was very into, he'd dye his hair blonde one day, he'd dye his hair black, depending on what his character was doing. And he would just sit there, he'd be tan all year round, you know, using tanning beds way before many other people. He had a red convertible. I mean, he was just a character. And imagine being, you know, 12 or 14 or 15 and you're on the, you know, in the dugout with your friends playing Little League, chewing sunflower seeds, and you look up and this bare-chested, blonde-haired man in a Speedo is coming down, and it's your dad.
Oh, what's the big deal? That's how life is at home with Angelo Poffo. You know, you just never know what you're going to get, right?
The coach of Randy, coaching through high school, used to say that Angelo would have to toggle on and off. So he was a really nice guy. Think about it. This is a wrestler who's on the road all the time, but he was there to watch all of Randy's games, and Lanny played as well. And he would be talking to him in the dugout, just like another parent before the game. And then like a couple of the younger kids who watched him on TV, where back then, like he was a heel, he was a bad guy. And so he would say to the coach, like, just give me 1 second here. I have to do a little something. He would turn to the kids and they go, what are you doing over here? You get out of here. I don't want to see you, you know, playing the perfect heel character, and then go right back to, yeah, so Randy yesterday had a really nice game. That play in left field was really great, or whatever, you know, like a total shift. Of being able to play the character and at the same exact time, you know, be a normal person, normal dad.
This book covers so many details. I like how if you couldn't get a source directly, you would cite and attribute the proper interview to where it came from, but one of the chapters I really enjoyed, because it was one of my favorite Randy Savage angles, was the chapter you've called Snake Bitten, where him and Jake Roberts do the bit where the Cobra bites into Randy Savage's arm when he's tied up in the ropes. And I've had the chance and pleasure to talk to Jake Roberts a few times, and he's even told me that back then they still can't believe that they got away with it now. And when you go through all these hundreds and hundreds of stories, no doubt, is there one that sticks out in your mind in this book that really kind of speaks to you as a favorite and maybe is a signature story of this book that wrestling fans like me might not know about as much?
Yeah, I've found when you write books like this, your favorite story is almost always from something you knew nothing about, and almost always from somebody you were not planning on originally talking to. It just always works out. It's never like, I got to talk to this guy and he's going to give me the goods. Like, it just doesn't work out that way. And in this case, through a couple different coincidences and conversations, I ended up talking to Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff's son. So, you know, anyone who grew up watching wrestling in this era, Mr. Wonderful, the kiss in the bicep and bigger, larger than life guy, Paul would take him to travel when he could, and, you know, all the way even to Hawaii and stuff, if they had longer trips and pay-per-views. But his memories were, you know, they would be in an arena and then they would go on the tour bus. And imagine, like, me or you at that age, you know, your dad, your dad's Mr. Wonderful. So, I mean, how awesome is that? Like, the big, larger-than-life, handsome bodybuilder dude. And two, his friends are Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage and Big John Studd and Andre the Giant and Junkyard Dog and all these guys. So he would go on the bus with them. And the stories he was telling, and I include the best ones in the book with Macho, obviously, are that Macho, you know, most of them were patting him on the head and, you know, messing with him a little bit. But Macho, like, saw him, and he says that he was the only wrestler where I felt seen. He would ask me about things, we would have conversations. He didn't just kind of blow me off as a little kid. And the beautiful part about this is it lasted throughout his life. Whenever he would run into him at, you know, years could pass because he wasn't, you know, once he got older, he had his own life. He wasn't touring with his dad. Then his dad went and did other things. He would remember, Macho would immediately remember who he was and how are you and what are you doing? And so that is one of those stories that really illustrates the difference for Macho Man. He didn't have to do that, but a perspective that you just can't get anywhere else except for a book like this of a superstar's son. What would it like to be a superstar son in a bus? That's just a hypothetical.
Yeah.
So I was able to include stories like that. So that's one of my favorites.
You know, John, that's a great story. I remember reading that one about Mr. So-So and everything else. But there's one story that's basically is the epilogue, I guess, the closing thought in the book. And it has nothing to do so much with Randy Savage as your experience in discovering all the things for this story and your acknowledgments. And it was the story of you taking your 11-year-old daughter on the road with you to go to some of these locations and see some of the places you were talking about. And you take some time and you found the actual tree that sadly Randy's vehicle collided with, and, you know, he died on the scene there. And without spoiling it too much, I guess, or as much as you'd like to, can you take us back to that story in that moment and what you saw and maybe what you felt that day?
Yeah, that was my favorite part about this book, is it's the first book I've written that I could kind of bring my kids along the journey with me. My son was 9 when I started this, and so he watched all the WrestleManias with me, you know, on Peacock, from 1 all the way through Macho's and all the way through the ones he was in. You know, he went down all the YouTube rabbit holes with me and the first Piper's Pit and when Elizabeth, you know, everything's on there. And so I kind of, he was into it and became, you know, he's into the current crop of guys now, but became a diehard Macho guy and knows as much about Macho as he does about Cody or LA Knight or whoever nowadays. And so I had that aspect with him. And then I'd always promised my daughter she could do the road trip with me. So we live in South Florida, so Tampa's only, you know, 4 or 5 hours away. So we drove up there with, you know, I had a list of sites, like you said. You know, I wanted to see the house he lived in, the condos he lived in. I wanted to see the gym he went to, you know, all the standard Macho things. But the piece de resistance was the tree that he hit, which I had heard became like a de facto memorial for him. But there's no real, the only way to get the address, I mean, you can Google it and some people have a something close, but you also have, like, the police reports, you kind of have to piece together where it is. There's no sign. Right. It hasn't become anything official. It's just a tree. And so the whole time up, my daughter at that time was 11. So, you know, she's like, it's a tree. Like she was excited about the road trip and, you know, stopping to get Eid. I have cousins who live up there, so she was going to see them. Mm-hmm. But the macho stuff was like, you know, okay, this is the reason we get to go up there. And the whole trip up, we're talking, I'm explaining, you know, to macho. This is before I wrote it, obviously. This is the research phase of the book.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, we're just going to see a tree. Like, what's the big deal about this tree? And I explained everything. And so then when we got closer, I gave her the map of like, I think it's over here. It's supposedly past this Perkins and near this church and across the street from this pharmacy. And then we're getting close to it. And I'm like, I think that's got to be it. And there's no really way to tell. So I'm driving it's on the other side of the road. I'm driving west. And as I'm going across, I catch some flailing like purple tassels like flying off the tree. So my daughter sees them too, and she's just like, I think that might be it. I saw some purple machos, purple, like she has. I actually had the shirt you had probably on that day, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And I turn around and do a U-turn. We pull along the side, and now she's excited. Like it's a treasure hunt. We found it. She's like, can you believe? Are people really do things like they remember him because dead 12 years or whatever it was already? So she gets out of the car before me and just like makes a beeline for the tree. And like, I just see her eyes light up and she's like, dad, look at this. And we go over there and there's all these Slim Jim wrappers, thumbtacks all around the tree. There are, you know, there's those like cult stickers of just the glasses all yeah. over that, you know, worn from years and years. None of them are really new. And then the coolest part as she's like walking around it and looking is at the base of the tree, like the knob of one of the, where the roots were two Macho Man figurines that, you know, had probably been there for 8 years. They were weathered. Barely the yeah. three stars could be seen on the pants anymore. But I have pictures of them and stuff, and they were there, and who knows who put them there and who knows who stopped and who knows why. But that like was just such a moment of her to understand. And then the thing that topped it off incredibly is that the journalism side is I'm looking at, I'm taking pictures, you know, just so when I'm writing it, I can remember exactly where we were. I took a picture of the two of us there and everything. I was like, look, I'm going to go knock on the door of the house. Maybe the same guy lived there. Maybe he was home. I don't know. She's like, you can't do that. You know, you don't know. And I'm like, this is journalism. This is what you do. And mm-hmm. incredibly, the guy was actually at the side of his house and he waved to me and I waved him over. And he did live there. It was his tree. He was home when his
wife was home.
And he told us this whole story. And my daughter is just sitting there, eyes wide. She asked a question and she got that rush that, you know, journalists get when you get that one source that no one has or that no one's talked to. And she's asking questions. And then it was like, it all came complete, like how important things were, how much everything mattered at that point in time. And so that was like something I had in my back pocket for, you know, when I'm writing. I didn't know where, obviously it wasn't going to fit in his story. I think I thought I was going to probably use it maybe in the intro. And then when Lanny passed, that made more sense. But it was just, I wrote the story up like, you know, early, just the bullet points of it. So I wouldn't have that feeling. And then 9 months later, I revisited it and was able to really tell how, you know, how it affected us. But from a personal standpoint, from a family standpoint, and it really does tie a knot to, like you said, why he matters. I mean, she, you know, for someone who never saw him wrestle, it's just a tree and yeah. it's not marked. And you really have to work to find it. And there was what looked like, you know, homages paid by dozens of people. And it was great. It was heartwarming. It was cool. And then, you know, talking to the man who lived there and how much Macho was so visible in the community and was always available for, you know, a smile and an autograph and still get into character for people or talk to high school teams or talk to churches or really kids philanthropies was one of his things. It was just fantastic.
The book, again, an amazing read, my friends. I can't tell you enough. Macho Man, The Untamed, Unbelievable Life of Randy Savage. It is available now through ECW Press and wherever you get your books. John Finkel has been joining us. And John, thank you again. For those wrestling fans out there that are like me and people that are listening to shows like this that think we know everything about Randy Savage, what was the biggest takeaway for you after doing all this that you say shines through telling the story that, again, not everybody maybe knows about him?
Yeah, I think the number one thing for those of us who would be like in the 90th percentile of Macho Man fans is that his first dream was not wrestling. Mm-hmm. This is really a story of transformation and perseverance. I mean, his actual first life's dream was shattered at 23 when baseball ended. And I wanted to make sure people understood that it wasn't just some trivia line like, oh, he played for the Reds and the Cardinals. Like, that wasn't just a footnote. Like, if you had asked him for the first decade and a half of his life after being a little kid, you know, there was no second plan. He was a baseball player. He was going to be a baseball player. All of his neighbors, all of his teammates, all of his coaches, his family, Lanny, there was no doubt he was going to play in the majors. He was that good, and he was that head and shoulders better than anyone else in their area and around him. And then the fact that he got so close and really got as close as you can and overcame a few different injuries to have it not happen. And then realize that, okay, like when baseball says they're done with you, there's no other major league baseball. Like you're actually done now. There's no career to be had. Everybody has said no, all the doors are closed. And we've all had dreams when we're kids of what we want to do. Most of us don't get nearly as close as he actually got to it. But to have the perseverance and the complete and total intensity and focus to turn from that, truly put it behind you. I mean, he never talked about baseball again. He never thought of a comeback. And to put on basically an entire second act, a second dream. He didn't have a college education. I mean, he really had nothing to fall back on. I don't think he was going to, you know, go to be an accountant or anything like that. He lived in a cubicle life wasn't going to be his thing. But to actually take all the lessons he learned, to take that beating from life as a young man and be able to turn it and then become the best of the best in wrestling, I think that's a part I knew very little beyond the one or two sentences that he played and a couple comments that I'd read from minor league players. Oh, he could hit or whatever. I think you really get to learn the psyche of Macho Man in baseball. You get to understand who he was and how he built himself with that tenacity. All of it is baseball. And when he finally does turn to wrestling and transforms himself from Randy Poffo to Randy Savage to Macho Man, the foundation was built from Angelo and the way Angelo lived his life and then his baseball career. So I knew next to nothing about how much that meant to him before I started the book. And now having written it and talking about it all the time and talking to the people who appreciate it like you, and it means so much, that's the part people are just blown away with, is how much that was not only like a part of his life. It was his whole life. There wasn't like he did some wrestling and baseball, whatever worked was going to work. Like he spot wrestled once or twice for fun when he was in minor leagues, but his goal was a baseball player. And so I hope people understand that, you know, when they read it, you can transform yourself at any time. You just have to commit to it.
All right, John. Well, before we let you go, again, thank you for sharing your time with us today. I'm sure that everybody listening really enjoyed your stories as well. But one of the things you mentioned at the very start of this interview, and it stuck in my mind since we started talking, that is that everybody grew up doing a Macho Man voice, which means you grew up doing a Macho Man voice. So, without putting you on the spot here, I want you to lay your best Randy Savage on us.
Give us your best Macho.
I'm not even ready for this.
For those listening to this on audio, he just whipped out the shades. I'm very impressed.
Yeah, before you have a Macho Man book, you have what's called a Macho Man manuscript. Yeah, you write that manuscript, they print it up, and now you all gotta read it. Yeah.
You know what? Not bad. Not bad. You know, if I had a criticism, the only thing I would say is that maybe, you just gotta bring it down a little bit. Yeah, a little deeper.
Got the belly in there, a little nasally with it, but you got real low.
Yeah, I got the belly in there because I had the Macho Nachos beforehand. Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes I can't go low enough, so I end up doing more of the unjustifiably type of.
There it is. Well, John Finkel again, Macho Man, The Untamed, Unbelievable Life of Randy Savage. I hope we get to talk wrestling again. Down the road. Thank you so much for your time today, man.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
McGuire on Wrestling.
So I don't know about you and how your Macho Man voice is, but problem with me is after we did that interview, I couldn't stop doing it for the better half of the day, because once you start with the Savage, you can't stop. I want to jump back into it right now, but I'm not gonna, because I have to go socialize with people now who I have to convince I'm normal. But hey, I'm glad you were here this week socializing with us and listening to the show. Be social about it. Join the Team MOW, McGuire on Wrestling Facebook page. If you can do us a solid and tell a friend or 10 about this show, we would love to get the word out to more people. Don't get me wrong, numbers are looking great every week, and I thank you so much for your support of this show, of the Alternate Commentary Table, and more shows coming to the McGuire on Wrestling podcast feed in the future. After WrestleMania, we'll start talking more about that, but I want you to have a great week this week. Next week, there will still be some content here for you, but again, I'm taking my birthday off, and I'm going to watch WrestleMania. You're going to watch WrestleMania, and we can talk about it all, you know what, in that Team MOW McGuire and Wrestling Facebook page, or anywhere else you find me. But until then, I'm going to bid you adieu, and until next week, as always, thanks for listening and letting me do what I do. Dimitri, Till next time.
Police safe, huh? Drive safe, yeah. I'll be seeing ya. Dig it.